country, you know, Biden and company, whoever it is, maybe they want to lock down the country. Maybe they want to put martial law out.
There's
maybe they
else.
Just wanted to forget. Let's okay, we got to secure this country. Let's secure it. And that way Trump gets more less freedom. I mean, there's a lot of theories coming out right now. We may never know. We don't know what happened, you know, November 22nd, 1963 with John F. Kennedy. We still don't know. And I know President Trump was trying to release that information. And I know RFK Jr. was trying to get it released too, but it is so safeguarded.
Experience the groundbreaking advancements of Leela's quantum technology, now backed by over 40 placebo-controlled studies conducted by elite institutions and renowned universities worldwide. This revolutionary technology surpasses previous achievements, as confirmed by prestigious organizations such as the Emoto Institute in Japan. Scientific investigations reveal that Leela's technology not only enhances blood health and circulation, but also neutralizes the adverse effects of electromagnetic fields, expedites wound healing, and elevates ATP production in human cells. Embrace the extraordinary benefits of Leela's tech as recognized and utilized by world-class athletes, esteemed functional medicine practitioners, and leading figures in the field of biohacking. Explore a range of transformative products from the Heal capsule, shielding you from harmful EMFs, to the Quantum Block, allowing you to infuse frequencies into your cherished possessions. Dive into the realm of innovation and wellness at sarahwestall.com/shop or by following the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have an amazing person. His name is Don Mann coming to the program. He's a former Navy SEAL. He's written 22 books. He has multiple television shows and specials he's done. He went around the world teaching people about to prevent assassinations in third world countries. He knows more. It's just, we had this planned for a couple weeks or a week and a half. And then the thing happened over this weekend with Donald Trump, and he's an expert on assassinations. And so we're going to talk about it in a very plain, raw language. We don't have a lot of facts. And by the time this airs, we did this on Monday, so it's going to air on Wednesday. So by the time it airs, maybe there's more facts that come out. But we just, from what we've learned so far, a few things, we just think it looks like incompetence. There's more going on here, and it spurs conspiracy theory. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then we're going to talk about his experience in the world from assassination standpoint, from a Navy SEAL standpoint. This is a really uplifting show. I really enjoy this guy. I tell him at the end, he's like, this is the Navy SEAL of Navy SEAL. Navy SEALs respect this guy, right? He's just a great person. I like talking to people like him, people, you know, Navy SEALs or top athletes or people who are top in their, in whatever they do, because there's a different level of integrity that is about really working hard and just being good at what you do, and it trying to be a good person all around. And so we talk about that as well. I hope you get a lot out of this. I think it's something that everybody needs to hear of. You know, you need to have a little bit of inspiration here and there. I mean, there's so much bad. And so we want to talk a little bit more about what it means to be good. I mean, how do you become good at things? But we also have plenty of juicy information in this, or juicy topics in this conversation. So, hold on to your hat for some of that. But before I get into that, I want to remind you about Masterpiece. All of you who watch my show know that Masterpiece is somebody that I really push, because they help get heavy metals, aluminum, microplastics, graphene oxide out of your system. And they are one of the only, if not the only company that actually are doing trials to prove that their product works. And they have an ongoing trial right now. And I got to tell you, their baseline, they always start with a baseline of what people's blood looks like. And their baseline is showing a 30% increase, 30% increase in a person having heavy metals, graphene oxide, microplastics, all the crap in your blood. It's actually increasing. Probably it's from the geoengineering. It's from the crap, the pollutants that we're getting. I don't know where it's all coming from. You can, you know, with everything that we're talking about, geoengineering is probably a big culprit of that, but it could be coming from other areas. Regardless, they're seeing a 30% increase in the baseline blood of these heavy metals, aluminum, graphene oxide, microplastics in their blood. That means it's even more important that you get it out of your system. And Masterpiece is seeing amazing results. In their early trials, they were seeing upwards of 70% reduction on some things like aluminum, and just across the board, they're seeing a reduction. Now, these things take a long time to get rid of, and you're also being bombarded with stuff in the air and in your environment nonstop. So you have to work on it continuously. It's not something you can do once and be done. Let's say you do a wonderful detox protocol and you get all this stuff out of your system. Well, you're immediately being bombarded again. So you need something that you can have and just on a continuous basis. And that's what Masterpiece is. It's gentle. I bought enough for my entire family, my daughter, my son, my husband, myself. I got it for everybody. I even got it for my parents. I always take care of them too. So I just want to share this with you because it is more important than ever that we get this stuff out of our system, because heavy metals and what it does to your mind, it makes it so that you can't think clearly and that you're more easy to be manipulated. And that's the last thing we need, is all of our neighbors and things being manipulated, because we're affected by that as well. So first we need to take care of our own bodies and mind, and then hopefully we can help others take care of their body and mind. So I highly recommend you get Masterpiece. It's $52.99 for a 2 month supply, which is really a good price for what's in it, because it not only has a really small nano size zeolite, it also has marine plasma, which is the most dense, bioavailable, nutritious element in the world, or substance in the world. So you are going to get high nutrition as well with it. Just wonderful product. And the link is below, or you can go to sarahwestall.com under shop and get it there as well. Okay, now into my really fascinating discussion with former Navy SEAL and author Don Mann. Hi, Don. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sarah. It's nice to be on the show with you.
Well, I'm so glad that we did this. It's such great timing. You were in three Navy SEALs teams, and you're so well respected. The Navy SEALs all respect you. First, I got to ask you, is the Navy SEALs kind of like a club? I mean, do you guys all become like this club of Navy SEALs?
It's like a fraternity. And some say it's the hardest fraternity to get into, even above the NFL, but it is close. It's really, as soon as you go through training with some of the guys, they're like family for life. Not all family members get along that well,
For
but
sure,
they feel like family. Some guys don't get along with other guys, just for personal reasons, but they're still like a family. It is, I think everybody feels it as a family.
Well,
One
because
big family.
your life is literally dependent on each other, and it changes you, doesn't it?
It does. It does change you in a good way, I believe.
I would think so. But
Yeah.
you're the perfect person to have on right now, because your last book was on assassins and why. What was the exact title? Assassins and Why the History
Yeah.
of Us. Go ahead.
It was History's Assassins.
History of Assassins. And you actually went around and taught people about this all over the world. And with this incident this past weekend, you have a lot of insight. And so it's just a perfect timing. I want to talk to you about more than just this, but I have a lot of questions. Like, my first initial reaction is something doesn't seem right, because how in the world could a civilian be up on a rooftop 100 yards away? I mean, how does that even happen if the security detail is doing their job?
And it's not like it was some professional assassin hitman. He was a 20-year-old know-nothing kid, and he was seen crawling across the roof, and he wasn't even almost trying to hide.
I
It
know.
was I agree with you. I think there's a lot of questions that haven't been answered, and I also believe we're probably not going to get all the answers.
For sure.
But when you go do a survey, a site survey for when a big event like this is going to happen, a Trump rally or anything like that, and I taught this all over the world with two well-known people, Jerry Parr who was Ronald Reagan's Secret Service detail leader when Ronald Reagan was shot. And Jerry jumped on him, put him in the limo, laid on top of him, felt him, and then felt wetness under his arm. He said, "Mr. President, we have to go to the hospital." And Ronald Reagan said, "No, I'll be okay as long as you get off me." He kind of joked around, but he did get nicked and his lungs were filling with blood.
Ooh.
And Jerry Parn went against the president's orders and said, "No, we're going to the hospital." And when they got to the hospital, Ronald Reagan waved at some people and then he collapsed. And then jokingly, he had such a great sense of humor. He said, "Well, as long as you're all Republicans, you can operate on me." But Jerry saved his life. But Jerry, if I could show you this,
yeah.
Jerry and I used to go around the world teaching how to do an advance and
how
to.
Show us that picture. I don't want to cut you off, but you were going to show us this picture, and it doesn't show up that great on Zoom. If you can send me that.
I
but
did.
Those, okay,
I
excellent.
sent it
And I'll
to
put
you.
it right here. Yeah.
Okay. And, but what you do is you do an advance, you know where the site's going to be, and you do it over and over and over. And the Secret Service, day in and day out, we saw on TV what the inner circle, the inner ring does to protect, and they make the human shield
yep.
around the president. Then they try to get him off the X as quickly as he can. And if there's life-saving techniques they have to administer, they'll do that. Like, for instance, if that was a carotid artery, they hit him in the carotid artery and he's starting to bleed out, they would have had to get him right off the X pretty quickly. But it's there's all these scenarios that play out. Since he was conscious, and you have to take the protectees, the person into play, what his character is and what his instincts are, because a lot of presidents and prime ministers and high level people, they'll buck the system a little bit. They won't go with what the Secret Service
For sure.
says. But the Secret Service in this case, and in Ronald Reagan's case, they trumped. They said, "This is what we're doing." And so there was what we saw on TV looked pretty good. Not excellent. That female couldn't find a holster. That just shows she's not used to holstering a weapon. You should be able to holster without even looking. Anybody who has to look down and especially look around to holster a weapon, they're not experienced. They're
well, and
just not
so yeah,
experienced.
and that's, but they also, I thought the Security Service should cover them, right? And they expose them, because how do they know that that was the only shooter that was around? I mean, there wouldn't, how do they know there isn't some conspiracy going on, and that they have to totally protect them, don't they? But
they sure do. And
but
you
he
know,
was exposed at the end. You know, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He was exposed. I don't know if the podium was armored or not. It was a bulletproof podium. I'm not sure. But regardless, this cover and concealment, the podium was cover, possibly if it was armored, but it was only concealment if it was not armored. But President Trump, he felt it on his ear, actually his right ear, and he felt the whiz go by. He got nicked in the ear, but he knew to go down right away. He was so sharp at that moment. He knew what to do. Now, if it wasn't armored, at least he had some concealment. The Secret Service at that point jumped on him. There's that one guy who went running around the stage. He was right on it. You know, he was super at what he was doing. And they jumped on him. And that's probably why his shoes fell off. Maybe it was almost violent, because you have to quickly cover your protectee. And that's they did for the most part. What I didn't like hearing is someone said, "What do we do next?" Mm-hmm. That's the worst thing you ever want to hear when you're protecting a detailee or a protectee, to hear one of your detail members say, "What do we do next? What do we do now?" That was said, and I was said by the female. So in my opinion, our whole government.
Well, she knew? I mean, maybe she wasn't a. This was no time on the job. I mean, why was she so much less experienced?
And she might not be the only one that was lesser experienced. She might not be the only one. But those are two things I just observed.
Yeah.
She couldn't holster a weapon quickly, because you have
That's
to do
too
the
bad. I don't like to see that. I don't like to see a female on national stage not be competent, because I know there's a lot of competent ones. So
oh,
anyways,
sure.
keep going. There
Sure.
are. Yes.
And the thing is, yeah, I mean, The Secret Service director, her mandate is one third Secret Service be female, which is okay if it's based on merit, but
I
not if it's
know.
only based on being female.
I get it. Yeah.
And when that happens, it just and when you just get assigned a position like this, it has to be based on merit. It has to be based like, wow, this person is a shooter. This person's done this in the military. This person has done this before, but not to apply and check the box female and get accepted.
I agree. I've been fighting my whole life to be viewed for merit. Just view me for
Yeah.
merit. That's it. And then I'm
That's,
fine. And so when I see that, I don't like it. You're right.
And there are some exceptional female people out there. I mean, super exceptional females, but she wasn't one of them.
That's
And how
right.
do you be? So I hit my opinion is, and I could be wrong, I'm just an observer, but my opinion is, yeah, what we saw on TV was good, but now people are questioning, why was this one televised? Why was this one
There's
televised?
a lot of questions. It just seems fishy, some of the stuff. It just and that and it creates conspiracies because there's so many things that didn't seem right.
Like when you heard the shots, boom, 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 you heard the
Yeah.
shots, five, five, six rounds. You heard the shots. You saw that one picture with the vapor barrier with the round coming past his head. You saw that. And then you heard the Secret Service shooting right back. The question that's weighing on me now, one of the many questions, is if they fired back that quickly, that means he was in sight.
Yep.
They saw him. They didn't just. The president get a shot and then come up and see him and then shoot him. I mean, it was seconds, a split second later, the Secret Service returned fire. So they had to have been watching him.
See, that's what I mean. How is he allowed to be there without one thing that I've heard is that months before Trump's team and Trump have been asking for better security, that they don't feel that they have proper security and that they were denied. Is that what you've heard?
I heard that too. I heard two things. I heard that they've been asking for more Secret Service protection and they didn't get it because of funding. I heard that. And I also heard for this particular mission, for that op, for his talk there, the Trump rally, that they got what they wanted. But I think there's a bigger picture. Like RFK Jr., his father was assassinated, his uncle was assassinated. Biden won't give him Secret Service protection. He
I
refuses to.
know.
Protection. So I think maybe they get lesser protection if you're not on the with the Biden team. That's my opinion right now. That's just my opinion, you know, because RFK Jr. He had an assassination attempt. Someone snuck in one of his rallies and they stopped him before they pulled the trigger. And that was just that didn't really get any publicity.
Well, he's
And
really
that
at
was
risk.
RFK Jr.
He's really at risk. I mean, let's be clear. It's
Yeah.
the fact that he's not getting protection. They're doing everything they can to minimize his public exposure, from a media standpoint. And he is, if he had any exposure, he'd be a legitimate candidate overnight. And everybody knows that.
Yeah. And then and then for the so when you have a guy like the president, President Biden, he should be getting the top-notch security.
For
But
sure.
it doesn't mean people under him, like when Obama was running, he had top-notch security. RFK Jr., they don't give it to him. President Trump absolutely got terrible protection because, like you asked a couple times, how does someone 130 yards away, a building in visible sight, it's got the height on him and the elevation to get a good shot? How, and then not caring if you're seen or not. Because when the people, the crowd started saying there's a shooter up on the roof or there's a guy up on the roof, I think he rushed his shots. I think he rushed his shots
And that's why
because
he
he heard
missed.
the. Well, I don't think he would have missed if Trump didn't turn his head.
Well, the interesting thing is there's a meme that's going around that says, "Hey, there's a, two security guys up there on the roof with their guns." And they said, "Hey, there's a civilian there on the roof." And the other guy goes, "I don't know why he's there. Let's give him 3 minutes and see what he does." I mean, it's really dripping in sarcasm, but that's the kind of stuff. People aren't stupid. I mean, people are immediately looking at this. In 2023, according to MIT Living Wage Calculator, folks in major cities needed around $68,499 just to make ends meet comfortably. But guess what happened next? In just 1 year, that number shot up a whopping 40% to $96,500. Can you believe how much inflation has affected us? That's the kind of inflation that keeps us up at night. Now, I don't know about you, but I sure can't afford to keep pace with that kind of skyrocketing cost of living. It's downright scary. But you know what's even scarier? Not doing anything about it. That's why I've been talking to folks over at Miles Franklin. They're all about helping regular people like you and me protect our hard-earned savings. With gold and silver, you can lock in the value of your money and shield yourself from the ups and downs of the economy. So if you are like me and want to keep your nest egg safe and sound, reach out to Miles Franklin at info@milesfranklin.com. Just mention my name, Sarah sent me, and they'll take care of you like family, because it's just how we do things here in Middle America. Don't wait until it's too late. Protect your future today.
And that's in daylight, you know, like a good sniper, a good assassination, someone who does assassinations, they've got cover, concealment, they're hidden. In wars, a sniper, you don't even know where the shot's coming from because they're behind a broken down building with maybe a little hole in the wall and they're hidden up in that.
And can't they hit from a mile away?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're good.
And that shot he took was a simple, simple shot. Really, almost any non-shooter could have done that same shot. Same with John F. Kennedy. Lee Harvey Oswald, his shot, I had a friend who was a Secret Service member, and the FBI asked him to do that shot all over, just to, you know, like his books at depository, take the shot. Can you get the shot? The car's coming around the corner. See if you can get the shot. He said, basically, I could have done it with, you know, one eye closed and one hand on the weapon. That was such a simple shot. But the shot that this guy did, this 20-year-old on President Trump, former President Trump, it was a simple, simple shot from a close in distance. In daylight, in broad view of everybody.
You would have thought he would have nailed him. But Kennedy, of course, the Kennedy assassination is laced with questions. I mean, right? That there's a lot of conspiracies around that because of the Zapruder film being. Yeah, yeah. There's just so many details that, as you know, that are questionable with the Kennedy one. Mm-hmm. And have been proven to be questions. You know, like I had Detective Rothstein on there saying he arrested one of the shooters. And You know who he is, Detective Rothstein, Jimmy Boots. He's like, I was on the scene. I arrested one of the shooters and they told me to let him go. So there's so many different things that are, as you know, I mean, you know, that's a big question mark. But so... what did you learn, like when you went around and you taught about assassins? What were one of the things that you, couple of the big takeaways from it?
Well, I wasn't teaching assassins really, but I was teaching protective details.
No. You weren't teaching people how to be assassins. Let me correct that.
Not at that time.
Yeah, that's funny.
But we taught Americans too, especially like state police, people like that. But the first thing you do is you have to be very, very competent with your weapon handling skills. So you spend a lot of time on the range. Mm-hmm. Handgun, long gun, shotgun. You spend a lot of time on the range, so it's secondary. It's a secondary. You just react. You just know how to react. You're trained to look at a person's hands first, then their eyes, because they could be delusional or crazy or something. You think that you can't make the judgment just by looking at someone's eyes. You look at their hands because they can't do anything unless you see their hands. Sure. And that's up on the line, you know, when you're shaking hands with the candidate or whoever he is, prime minister, the king or the president, all the spectators who come by and meet and greet with these people, these VIPs, the Secret Service detail is on the left and right of this person and behind them. And they're looking at everybody down each side of the line, and they're looking behind them, and they've done the advance up front to make sure tall buildings or places within the distance where a shot can be taken has been checked out. And then they have a counter sniper team. The counter sniper team, that's the one who took out this 20-year-old shooter. The counter sniper, when it was first introduced to me, that there's counter sniper, I almost thought, like, what's the point of that? It took me a little while to understand this. This was, you know, decades ago. But a counter sniper team, they're really great snipers. And one of them, my friends, was the world champion sniper with 1,000-yard iron sight. He's the world champion in that. And he was the head of the counter sniper team in the U.S. Secret Service. And the counter sniper team, when they go out on the advance, they not only look at everything where a sniper could be, but they counter that sniper. So if there was a building, you know, 500 meters away, they would know that somebody could be in there. They would check that building out, but then they would also be over here ready to have that shot in case a shot was from that building. I mean, they counter sniper looks at every contingency that a sniper could actually take a shot from. That failed miserably with President Trump, former president.
I know. It's so incompetence. And I know the real life, this is the thing, real life has incompetence in it, right? I mean, we all experience that. But this level of incompetence is why the conspiracy theories exist. And conspiracy theories aren't just, aren't necessarily false. I mean, a lot of conspiracy theories are true, right? But that's why these are coming up, because it was so bad.
It was terrible. It was absolutely, and again, like that book I wrote, you know, History's Assassins. If some of these conspiracy theories proved to be true or are thought to be true, one of them is maybe the shooter, we knew the shooter was going to be there. Maybe it's a Lee Harvey Oswald type thing. And maybe the U.S., who's ever running the country, you know, Biden and company, whoever it is, maybe they want to lock down the country. Maybe they want to put martial law out.
There's
maybe they
else.
Just wanted to forget. Let's okay, we got to secure this country. Let's secure it. And that way Trump gets more less freedom. I mean, there's a lot of theories coming out right now. We may never know. We don't know what happened, you know, November 22nd, 1963 with John F. Kennedy. We still don't know. And I know President Trump was trying to release that information. And I know RFK Jr. was trying to get it released too. But it is so safeguarded. I would be really surprised if we find out what happened here with President Trump's near assassination.
For sure.
Our country's in trouble. Oh, my God.
All that's going to come out is all these details that show that it's a complete farce and that there's something more happening. And then we will never know what the true details are. And I always say, unless I'm in the back room, you know, because I just did a series on fifth generation warfare and mind control. Like, unless we're in the back room with the scientists and the studies, we don't know exactly what they're trying to do. All we can go off of is the results of it or the actions of it or what we see on the street. We don't know, but we can come up with some good hypothesis on first what their abilities are and maybe what they're trying to do.
Right, right. That's all we can go on. That's right. And especially when the shooter's killed, we're not getting information from him, and you have to neutralize the threat. You don't know what the next shot's going to be. And then again, like you said, there could have been other threats there. There still could have that weren't caught. We don't know that either.
What do you think about the shooter being in a BlackRock commercial? I was like, what? What is that?
I don't know.
I don't know if that says anything other than it's just interesting, but or he's involved in a woke crowd that are anti-Trump. I mean, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. And then it goes against, you know, he's a registered Republican too. But then he made a $15 donation to a Democrat cause. I don't get it. And he's just a young kid from a couple hours away from where the shooting took place.
Yeah. So everything just doesn't, it just smells bad, right? So when you were teaching about you were teaching third world countries how to protect against assassins, is there any kind of theme that you saw that, I mean, like how often are governments involved in the assassins or the opposing parties involved in the assassination attempts in third world countries?
The US has been involved and trying to take out Castro. That's kind of well known that we wanted to get rid of him. There was some attempts on Hitler, which would have been a good thing, but those failed also. So we've been involved on trying to take out world leaders ourselves. Who knows what happened with Saddam? That there was a couple assassinations attempts on him. It's not really out yet if the U.S. was behind it or not. But the U.S. has been involved in that type of thing too. And we are the U.S. You can only imagine how many third world and other
Oh,
nations
for
have
sure.
tried the same thing, especially, in the war-torn countries. Especially, what happened with Russia with that guy Wagner. I mean, those assassins. I mean, that guy was hardcore. He went into the prisons. He said, "Okay, you guys are all going to be killed here in this prison. Most of you are murderers. You're on your last leg, but I'll let you come on my team of mercenaries. And you might, if you survive where I'm putting you, you might have another chance for life." And that was who they actually, he worked for Putin. He did a lot of Putin's dirty work all over. And that was working for Putin, but he's doing that all over. Well, he died. He got blown up in the plane crash, supposedly. But that Wagner group's operating big time in Africa right now. And that is exactly what they're good at doing, just the assassinations, killing people, taking people out. And they are hardcore and they don't really care about rules or regulations. And they were so powerful. They were Putin's most powerful arm, even though they weren't directly officially linked because Putin couldn't officially be linked with them. But there's other groups like that, mercenary groups.
Isn't it like that at the mercenary groups are really ruthless, and it's incredible. It becomes almost it's a war of the fittest. It's a mob scene.
It is, and it's always been there too since the beginning of time, really. It's beginning of warfare. There have been maybe not called mercenaries back then, but people who'd go out and their job was to kill people,
And
and a
pirates.
lot of it was for political purposes.
Oh, pirates are the same thing, right? They are, we just call them these bad guy pirates, but they were used as mercenaries a lot of times.
And now there's more piracy than ever. Yeah, especially out in Somalia waters and places like that too.
Well, but
I read
that's
a book
why.
on piracy once, and it was amazing. Going back to women, now I got to tell you this: the most brutal pirate of all of history was a female, and she was a Chinese Muslim female, and
That's
she
crazy.
had 700 ships. She was feared around the world, but that was like the most powerful pirate, way ahead of Blackbeard or anybody else. They had the look that you think of a pirate, but she was a female, and she was the most feared of all pirates,
Was because she was just crazy? I mean, it's
and really
smart and crazy.
smart. Yeah, really, really smart. She hooked up with a pirate, and he was really good too. But then she surpassed him after he died, and she started taking over these ships, and she was ruthless, like beheadings, like on the spot if they didn't do what she's ordered. And she had the rule of the piracy world for years.
Well, that's why you can't just assume that one group or the other are good. You
No.
can't be naive.
No. And Carlos Hathcock, one of the US most respected snipers. I respect that guy so much. He passed away a few years ago. But his book's right over there, but he had a book called 93 Confirmed Kills. And he had a hard time getting, but he assassinated some generals and some high level people in Vietnam, and he would sneak up for days, and he'd take the shot and sneak out of those jungles, and he got away with it. But one of the hardest challenges he had was toward the Apache lady, and she was on the other side, North Vietnamese side, but she was a sniper. And she was feared, and she Carlos's troop was ambushed, and a lot of people were killed. And this Apache lady across the valley, all the way up on another hill, was torturing one of his best friends. And Carlos was on this hilltop, she was on this hilltop, And she was brutal. She was brutal. So she was torturing his buddy that was captured, and she cut off his eyelids, and she
Oh,
was spinning
gosh.
betel nut juice in his eyes, and she cut off other parts of him. And anyways, Carlos was seeing bits and pieces of this. And then he finally got her. And but she was a there's so many feared women who are brutal, just like men. But just because they're a woman didn't mean they don't have this in them, that they can still be a brutal murderer or assassin. But there were 2,000 Soviet women trained to be snipers and assassins. 2,000.
Well, doesn't that make them almost a better candidate for it if they have the talent? Because they're not viewed by the general public or by people as somebody that could be. I mean, there's the stereotype, and so they can get by a little longer on the camouflage.
We for men, you call it be the gray man, be the one who nobody's gonna suspect of you having these skills and talents. But if you're a woman, it's even easier to do that because, like you said, who's gonna see that person walking down the street and think that could be a threat?
Nobody thinks they have it, and so it ends up being a huge advantage for them. So you have to, is part of training is, I remember I went to the spy museum in Washington,
I
D.C.
went to that.
And one of the things they said was that you can't, you got to keep your eyes open because this little old lady in the corner, she might be the one that you have to worry about.
And that's even like Vietnam, the little lady would come up with her sons and then have a grenade and throw it and kill everybody. And of course, Iraq, Afghanistan, the men made the women go do that. And,
It's awful.
It is
They made
because
children go do it, right?
they sure do. Because you're pulling the heartstrings, like what
Ah, it's awful.
normal human being's going to want to shoot a 7-year-old boy. Actually, going back to Carlos Hathcock, he was asked to shoot a little boy on a bicycle because he is smuggling AK-47s in the baskets on the bike. So this boy was coming up on the bike, and Carlos Hathcock was asked to take a shot and kill him. And Carlos looked through the scope. He said, "I can't kill that little boy." And so he shot the headset of the bicycle, and the bicycle kind of exploded, and the boy fell off, and the AK-47s were everywhere. But then the little boy picked up an AK-47, started shooting and spraying, and so Carlos had to take him out. But yeah, when you have children or women, that you don't expect them to be the enemy, but the way you have to train in law enforcement and in the military is you have to not let your forebrain resistance prevent you from doing that if you have to, because you have to take out the threat. If the threat is that little old lady and she's 85 years old, and you come through a door for room clearance and she's sitting there with an AK pointed at you, you have one option. You have to take her out.
Yep.
And if it's a boy or a girl, you have to look at him as a threat. So you have to take out the threat.
But that's why the soldiers need a lot of help sometimes, right? Because if they're taking out little kids, it becomes something that really affects their mind. Good people have a hard time dealing with that.
That's so correct. So we have this forebrain resistance. We were losing. So back in World War I, I don't know the numbers off, but we were shooting millions and millions of rounds downrange, and the number of hits and kills were a really low ratio, like say, let's just say 100,000 to 10 or something. And then World War II, the same thing happened. Lots and lots of rounds downrange, but not that many kills. Korea, the same thing was happening. But then in Vietnam, when we started losing, they did a study like, what is going on? How come our troops are missing all these targets, these people, the enemy? And they did a study, and Colonel David Grossman talks about this in his books. And it was found out that an 18-year-old boy, a 17-year-old boy, a 19-year-old boy goes to war. And for whatever reason, political or religion or whatever, this country's at war with this country, they can't get that past that forebrain resistance. And they don't want to kill that other 17-year-old they're looking at. It's not normal for people to want to just kill people. And unfortunately, what happened is, okay, in law enforcement and military, we learned, okay, start making threats or targets when you're on the range, make them realistic. And if they are a threat with a weapon or a bomb or something, that's a threat. Just make it a threat and they take him out. You could see this big, 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 mean-looking thug, but if he's not a threat, it's you don't take that person out. So the military and law enforcement since Vietnam have been training differently with this realistic scenario-based training. Unfortunately for our kids, especially in the U.S., there were studies done like, why do we have so many murders in this country? Why are so many kids in school shooting each other? So we neutralize that forebrain resistance a little bit by saying, those aren't people, those are threats. Take out the threat. Unfortunately, for all these computer games and movies that kids are watching, when they kill somebody, wow, they get points, or their girlfriend's, hey, good job. They get some sort of a praise. And so now it's easy for kids to get desensitized by watching or playing games where you are killing people in the game. And so now our kids have become desensitized too, which is one of the biggest reasons people fear that our country is worse than other countries, because we were the first with all this gaming with the, and it's so hypocritical, you would think, because Hollywood is really the anti-gun, big anti-gun means in our country, but they're the ones who put out all these games and the movies, which.
Violence, I always said violence can be all over the place, but we can't have not that sexual stuff is good either, but if there's any kind of like sexual stuff, it's rated R and it's really restricted. But violence on a PG can be everywhere, and it's normalized. And I always thought, why is this okay and this other isn't okay? Not that I like either, but why is loving others not okay, but killing others is?
Even if you look back at early cartoons, Wile E. Road, the Roadrunner,
Yes.
all the things that would kill those cartoon characters, we learn at an early stage, kill it about killing.
Yeah,
And
the Roadrunner
does desensitize
cartoons.
people. I love those
They
cartoons.
never die though. The guy, the bunny or the Roadrunner, they get he gets ran over and flattened, and then his body just comes,
I remember an interview with a young kid, and he shot a boy. I think he was in fifth or sixth grade. And they said, "Why did you shoot him?" He said, "Well, we had a fight, and I wanted to beat the kid up. But if we fought out on the pavement, I would have scraped up my knees. My pants would have got ripped. It's just easier to shoot somebody." Like totally desensitized.
Wow. But that's almost psychosis, right? Something like that. And that's, but we're training psychosis, right? Desensitized to being desensitized comes from violence or trauma or something. And these video games are doing that same process on these children, but it's not coming from a trauma family situation or a trauma something. It's coming from a video game.
Right.
Wow. And but it's the same psychosis.
And same results. And then our military and law enforcement, fortunately, they have that because now they're able to defeat the enemy before the enemy defeats them, whoever it might be, a criminal or a terrorist or just some bad guy. But I like also what you said earlier. What's happening now, if you do, I mean, I had a call with a friend of mine a little while ago. He's a Marine, and he was crying. And his father was a Marine. I've known them both real well. And he was crying, and he couldn't even talk really. And he was talking to me because his daughter just turned 7. And he was in one of these war zones where a 7-year-old girl was killed. And now he sees his own daughter who's 7, and it just breaks him to pieces. Even it just flashes. He has flashbacks to how the other little girl died. But imagine, so right now, first time in America's history, hopefully the last time, I mean, a lot of our military people who came in right after 2000, 9/11 happened. If they stayed in for 20 years, that's a full career, which is now they're out, but their entire lives they've been at war. And, like SEALs, a lot of special forces people, Delta Force, people like that, they've been overseas 300 days a year, for their entire adult lives around killing and their friends being killed and their friends being wounded and them killing a lot of people. I don't even have any, I can't even fathom what that does to the psyche of those minds. And I don't think anybody can, whatever PhD titles are behind someone's name, I don't think it's, we can comprehend the damage that's being done to those who are also taking lives on a daily basis because it's war or it's law enforcement.
That's right. You start to wonder too, if we are almost too militarized just in society. And it's this nuanced situation where we need to be, but we don't want to be. And so how do we deal with that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want your peaceful society to always have armored weapons around.
You don't. You really don't. And you know, it's kind of funny. I might be one of the only SEALs who think like this, but I'm not a crazy gun guy. I have guns, of course, and I'll use them if I have to. I'll use them, but I don't agree people should have guns unless they've been trained. They know how to use them, because we have so many weapons out there in the wrong hands of people. But I also understand that if we take all the guns away, which will never happen, but in a, say, this hypothetical world where someone said, let's finally, we're going to go door to door, we're going to get everybody's guns. The only people who are going to have guns are going to be the bad guys.
That's right.
The only people we'll have will be the bad guys. And, you know, we just celebrated July 4th the other day. If there weren't guns then, we wouldn't have won that, you know, our independence from the
That's
Brits.
Right.
So and I like the way I like the way this was put. Actually, I just spent some time with him a couple of weeks ago, Ted Nugent, who's a big time gun guy, and I loved his music, and we had such a nice time together. And Ted Nugent, I like the way he says it. He said, "Well, a lot of people drown too. We can't take the water away. There's too much of it. We can't take the water away. So there are a lot of deaths. A lot of them shouldn't be happening." But we're not going to be able to get the guns away. I do believe that the right and left have to, you know, the left's just saying take away the guns. The right's just saying it's all the crazies. They need mental health. I really think there's some sort of a solution in the middle where guns and weapons have to be in the hands of those who are trained. Because I've trained people with weapons all my life, and I've seen really, really, really good people accidentally shoot people. And people who aren't trained at all. I've been at weapon shops and swap meets and gun shows. I can't believe it. I don't have a weapon. Well, I do have a weapon right here. I mean, they would hand up a weapon and they'd point it at you as they're giving it to you. I mean, they're breaking every safety rule in the book, and they're the ones selling weapons. And then the customers will take the weapon and sweep people, things you can't do. And so I don't even like being around people with untrained people with weapons, because something's bound to happen.
Well, my dad, and I came to appreciate him later. He trained like the whole area. He was the NRA guy. He trained everybody how to use a weapon. And I remember in college, I didn't appreciate it. But then I started learning about the world, right? And I said, oh, we need, and I did a little mini documentary on guns and how the areas with more guns have less violence. And really, it's only a few neighborhoods in the areas that have no gun, you know, where you can't carry a gun, that's the most violent. It's really interesting when people really look at it. But the hypocrisy of it, he was barred from teaching people how to, in our area, we're in Minnesota, which is an extreme leftist organization, you know, just the majority of the people don't agree with how this place is being governed, but they stopped allowing him to teach people how to use guns. I mean, that's the most peaceful thing I think you can do. And I see a hypocrisy across them. Like, they are also the most pro-war people too right now. And because the military, from what I understand, they're the ones that don't want the wars to keep the soldiers coming back. They're the one, you know, they're the Ron Paul voters who just said, we want a strong defense for defense, not for offense. But you know, like the Biden administration, war after war after war, it seems like a hypocrisy that's just ingrained in them and they can't see past it.
I couldn't agree more. In 1991, the Gulf War, first Gulf War, President Bush, H. Bush, George H. Bush, he went in there, got the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and it was a success. That was a success. Panama, we went in there and got Noriega out. Success. We lost a lot of people killed for getting one person out. And then Somalia, we lost quite a few people. But the sad part is, and I almost even don't even like saying this because I'm pro American, and 21 years in the military, then 24 years with the government, I am so pro American, but I am so fed up with wars and needless wars. Because Vietnam, we went in there, the French lost, so we went in, 58,000 people killed, 10 years to try to stop the spread of communism from the north coming down to the south. We walked away next week later, basically the north's taken over the south. And who knows how many, close to over 1 million people or so were killed in that. We lost 58,000. So we lost Vietnam. And then Afghanistan takes place. Yeah, okay, so they had some terrorist training centers in Afghanistan. SEALs could take them out. We didn't need a 20-year war. And this is Republicans and Democrats
That's
going, and
right.
presidents who are Republican and presidents are Democrats, keep the war going, keep the war going. And now I'm starting to learn why. And then Iraq, Saddam Hussein, okay, he's a bad guy. He'd shoot people at the table. His sons, Uday and Husay, they raped and killed a lot of women, fed the remains to the lions. I lived with the Kurds for a couple of months there, and my interpreter said, "Do you know why all these kids have these boils and cysts all over?" I said, "No, why?" He said, "Because Saddam, when he gassed his people, when he the gas he used on the Kurds, it passed down in the DNA, so the kids are getting
Oh.
all this stuff too." So Saddam went around the world telling all his enemies, "I have weapons of mass destruction." He did use them on the Kurds. We know that. Then our military is finding components all over this countryside. And I was there right after the invasion, and so we were sure. And President George W. Bush, he went in there because we were just hit on 9/11. I understand why we went in, with him saying he's got the weapons of mass destruction, seeing the kids, seeing the components. But I absolutely don't know why we stayed for 20 years. We just kept killing people, and they kept killing us, and we lost. So we've lost these big wars we're in. And
But we
now,
could have won, right? If we would have been
oh,
strategic and tactical about it.
yeah, we took out Saddam without any aftermath thought, what's going to happen without the Ba'athist Party. And now they'd just be at war and they'll kill each other forever. Who knows? But at least Saddam, that brutal dictator, was keeping his country somewhat contained. And when we took him out and destroyed that party, there's no containment anymore. They're
Yeah,
just
he
the.
was better than what we gave them, right? I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, he sure was. And then, for Ukraine, okay, the highest numbers I've seen, 700,000 people killed in just over 2 years. 700,000. We thought 58,000 was a lot in Vietnam, but Ukraine, 700,000 on the high end, maybe 500,000 on the low end, not to mention the millions of people who are wounded. Russia was trying over and over and over to make peace with us. He said, just don't take these countries. Don't make them NATO. I can't have NATO people on my border. Okay, you took these 15, you took these 16. You can't take Ukraine. You will not have Russia or Chinese troops on your border. I can't have you on my border. Don't do it. Don't do it. Here's a peace agreement. We ripped it up.
I
Boris
know. We
from
didn't even
England, we ripped
bother.
it up.
Yeah, and then we also had 200,000 troops on the Russian border as if we were baiting them on to try to get a war to start.
And I believe we wanted a war. I believe we really wanted a war. And now I'm starting to learn a little bit more. Our GDP, and I can't base this on fact, but our GDP, what the reason we're so powerful as a country is our GDP is high.
Yep.
But 50% of it, up to 50%, could be based on the sale of rockets, missiles, and warfare fighting equipment. Now we put all these sanctions on Russia. And Iran, Russia says, Bring on the more sanctions. You're not hurting us. As a matter of fact, our GDP is higher than yours now. They're one of the strongest countries coming out of this. We've lost big time. We lost Ukraine. And all we told Ukraine is we'll keep sending you funds. We don't want any Americans killed on your soil, but we'll send you all this funds and the weaponry, the most corrupt country in the world, basically. Zelensky's making, pocketing so much money. And yeah, you're 700,000 or so killed. That might make our news, but we'll just keep funding this war. And we've lost that a long time ago. They won't even mention that on our news.
Well, and, but the people that are being killed, that whole generation of people being killed, and then they're just, they have to pay back those loans and they're selling off their land anyways to multinational corporations. I mean, those poor people, it just is, it's a total fiasco.
Yeah. And Putin could have been a lot more aggressive and gone all the way into Kiev. But he doesn't want all that as a problem. He just needs, when the Soviet Union was there, there was a big buffer between Europe, all these Soviet Union countries, and Moscow. Now they're coming right up on Moscow. And we're taking these countries and putting missiles and rockets pointing toward Russia. You can't blame him. I mean, any country would do what he's doing. And
it doesn't mean he's a good guy, right? It just means that we would be doing the same thing. That's what I try to tell people. You shouldn't be a Putin apologist. It's like, just because I recognize how stupid we're being and that I would do the same thing he is, doesn't mean I'm a Putin apologist.
No, he's a KGB bad guy, but he's a good guy for their country for the most part. He's pro-Russian.
Right. I agree with that. Yes.
Yeah.
He has done really good for their country when you analyze what they've done. You're exactly right. Because I spent a couple of days just saying, okay, what has he done for Russia? If I was a Russian, I'd like him.
I would too. I respect him as a Russian leader. Mm-hmm. And that's how Russians think, the gassing. And that, I mean, they're different than we are, you know. In the Middle East, they do the beheadings. Russia does, you know, supposedly that the gassings. We know he's gassed people, his own people, and poisoned his own people. You know what's awful to think about as an American? And Putin will bring this out. Putin will say, okay, I'll speak for China. I'll speak for Russia. Look at all the countries we've attacked in the last 30 years. The list is about this big. Look at all the countries the U.S. has attacked in the last 30 years. And look at the millions of people you guys killed. I get blamed for gassing a number of people, a handful of people. Look at the millions of people you guys killed for nothing. What'd you get out of it? And now we keep poking at him. And he's got 5,000 nuclear weapons. And he doesn't bluff. He says, I am at the point where I'm allowed by world order to use my nuclear weapons, my tactical nuclear weapons. If you guys keep pushing me, I am going to use my, and we're pushing into a nuclear war.
But they claim they can win it. Right? These idiots think they can win a tactical nuclear war.
I do too. I think so too, because they have the mentality that the U.S. can do no harm. It's our way or the highway. Everyone else listen to us, because we were like that up until 91. But now China has progressed so much. Russia has progressed. Iran has progressed. North Korea has progressed. And everybody's progressing. Our military's as weak as it's ever been since World War II. Nobody wants to be recruited anymore. The recruitment levels are lower than ever. And this generation, this woke generation, people who don't, I mean, I it's very, very rare I'll see a young person who I would feel good about him or her going to defend our country. It's rare to see that anymore.
Although I mean, I coached
my father
a lot
was
of kids.
In the Navy, and we were
in
World War II. You know, the Pearl Harbor came. My father, his two brothers and his sister, he quit high school, all went right to war. Because that's what you have to do. They came home after fighting for 4 years in that brutal World War II. They went right back to work. No complaints. No, I got PTSD. I can't do this. They went right back to work. That was a hard generation. I think every generation since then is just getting softer and softer and softer. Now we have people, okay, the military, we got to make sure that we're offering transgender operations or hormone replacement so the military will pay for those little boys who want to become little girls. That's what our military we're not going to survive with this the way we're going. is
But
my
even the
fear.
tough, you know, I coached kids, and so I saw a lot of really great kids, right? In sports, and especially
Good.
the elite sports where they really get good, they have to have a different mentality, right? Those kids are probably the ones that could go off and fight, but they're surrounded by this other mentality. So they struggle to maintain this integrity that they've been bred into, you know, that they inherently have. They struggle because, and they feel alienated. That's something I get a lot from these young ones, is they feel alienated because the people around them don't think like them.
I could see the, how that would be. The only time I come across kids like you get to coach is, you know, people want to go in the military or something. And every now and then I am so impressed, but I'll do talks and I'll talk to some kids and I'm just so disappointed so often. It just
I
seems like
know.
the wave is going against what we need.
Well, and that's why I love Navy SEALs, because they have that same mentality that I'm talking about. I mean, they're at the peak. I don't coach kids anymore. I miss that aspect of it, you know, because I'm so busy doing what I'm doing. But that's why I like talking to Navy SEALs, and that it's just that pure integrity of doing what it takes to be good and to get things done. And it's a lost art almost. It's just not common.
The message I like to give to kids nowadays, ones who want to hear it, is I said, if you want to be, a lot of times I get calls from fathers and uncles and things saying my son or my brother or somebody who wants to be a SEAL. So I've been getting these calls for 30 years or so. And it's taken me a while to figure out what to tell these people. But now I tell them, it's only four things you have to do in life, only four things. So we'll say if you want to be a SEAL or a Marine or a fighter pilot or a football player, but let's just use the example SEAL. If you're asking me how to be a SEAL, really all you have to do is four things and it's simple. And you'll become a SEAL if you don't get hurt. And one is every day, just do something that makes you stronger. And they'll want a workout plan and say, no, if you have to ask for the plan, you're not strong. You got to go find it out. You find out a good workout plan, but you figure out how to get stronger each and every day. Number two, each and every day, do something to make yourself faster. So, if you want to be a SEAL, you got to be a runner, do fartleks, do hill repeats, do sprints in the pool, but every day and measure it, make sure you're getting faster. Every day, do something to make yourself faster. And the best triathlete in the world told me this when I asked him how he stayed in such good shape. He said he works out every day of the year. So, I did that for over 20 years without a day off. And so, that's kind of got me thinking like every day, do something to make you stronger, every day, something faster. And if it is a SEAL you want to be, every day do something to make yourself smarter in that category. So go see what the guys were doing in World War II and Korea and Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan, the 89 countries they're in now. Learn to shoot and learn to skydive and learn to dive, learn to navigate, do all that stuff. Just get smarter every day. And most importantly, I always tell them, every day, do something good for somebody. So if you see the man across the street emptying his trash, go help him, or go help him rake his yard, or help your mother do the dishes, or just help somebody every day. Because if you're 12 and I'm telling you this, or if you're 18, it doesn't really matter the age. But when you go to selection or you're going to camp and they're looking at you compared to all the other people, you just might be one of the strongest, if not the strongest person there. You might be the fastest. And you might be the smartest. And most importantly, you're the one everyone wants on their team because all you know is doing good for people. And that message, when I talk to young kids, they say, well, I don't really need to be strong in what I want to do. I said, but you can be a stronger leader or you can be a stronger organizer. They said, well, I don't really need to be fast. I said, well, be more efficient. If this is what you do for, if you're a banker, I do this talk for banks a lot. If you're a banker, how can you do your job more efficient? Just become a more efficient banker. Become a stronger banker. Become a stronger leader. Become a stronger follower. Just get stronger and get smarter at banking, whatever you do in the banks, you know, and of course, help your team. And that when I talk to kids, I like telling them that because there's like a little light that goes on, like, yeah, that's not that hard because it's not hard to do those four things every day,
Well,
you
and I
know.
think for me, and I love hearing this, and it can apply to any field. I like the fact that you talked about a banker or anything that you do, but it also allows you to be able to sleep better at night. You're just more at peace, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. Because you go to bed, oh, good. What a good workout that was. I love that documentary. I learned so much from that documentary, and I was so happy to help the old. Like in my case, I helped this man who lives up the road. He's 84 years old, and I love helping him. And you just go to bed like, what a good day. And yeah, I love that feeling. And if some of those things don't happen, like, oh man, I kind of wasted part of the day. I got to make up for it tomorrow.
Well, yeah, I always feel I can be better. For sure. How can I be better? But gosh, this is such a great conversation. How can people, you wrote 22 books. I mean, you do amazing work. 22. I've heard from others, you're the Navy SEAL SEAL. Like, you're somebody that the Navy SEALs look up to, which is just that's such a compliment. I can't tell you. So how can
They
people,
shouldn't. I mean, there's so many other SEALs
I
people
know,
should be
I,
looking up to than me, but I mean, thanks for saying
Well,
that.
I think it's so great. So how do people, you have 22 books, you have television shows, you have all these things. How can people get your books, watch your shows? I mean, where can people follow you?
I think if you Google my name, Don Mann, Navy SEAL, that stuff shows up on Google. But I have a website, and it's US Frogman. US Frog and man with two N's, like my last name. So usfrogman.com, that's my website. And it does show the TV shows and the books and the training and things.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the
It's
program
nice
today.
to meet you like this.
Yeah, very nice to meet you. And thank you for everything you're doing. We need strong characters right now. That's exactly what we need. We need strong characters with integrity, and that's what's going to lift our country out of the mess we're in.
Oh, Sarah, thank you for everything you're doing and getting the word out like you do. You do such a great job, and you're such a professional. You're making a difference.
Thank you. I actually really appreciate that. So thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Sarah. Bye bye.